Welcome to Flunking the Written, a fully spoiled Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast in which two Uber fans break down every episode of the show. Join Kimberly and Megan every other Tuesday as they overanalyze each scene and discuss the Buffyverse at large. Now let's meet up with the Scoobies and get into this episode of Flunking the Written.
What can I say? I flunked the written.
All right, Cam, we're ready to get into our discussion of The Prom, which was written by Marty Noxon and directed by David Solomon. And the DVD blurb is, Buffy battles three fearsome hellhounds that another classmate has programmed to attack students during Sunnydale High's senior prom.
It is technically accurate.
I don't care much for the monster of the week of this episode, but overall, I enjoy the episode a lot. And I know it's one of your favorites, right?
Yeah, I think I would call it actually my favorite.
Awesome.
But yeah, that blurb leaves out
basically all the best parts.
Well, and like the entire point of the episode.
Yeah.
Because the Hellhound plot line is just there, like to fill time or something, to make it be a Buffy episode.
Yeah, to have that thing to fight and have Buffy have the reason to miss prom, or at least part of prom.
To be late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fashionably late.
To help move the... I can't be normal thing.
Oh yeah. We always have to hit that note in every episode. But yeah, I'm excited that this is your favorite. My favorite is going to come much, much later on.
I don't know what your favorite is.
Well, you'll get surprised later on. It's in season 5. I can give you that much. It's in season 5. There's your hint.
Is it sad? Because, yeah.
Is it sad? Like most of the episodes in season 5 could be that.
You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, I got you.
Everyone knows what I'm asking.
I got you. oh, man. So let's get back to this episode. Okay. Before we get too off the rails. And we start off with Buffy and Angel napping at the mansion. And Buffy's got the bedhead that is the bedhead that you can only have if you're on a television show. And
of course. It's just tiny, tiny, unnoticeable bit of bedhead that is immediately fixed right after it's mentioned.
And then we're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently they got carried away with some post-slayage napping. Just enjoying a little cuddle time above the covers with a little throw over them. It's all very kosher.
Yeah, and then she gets up to try to find a mirror to fix her non-existent bedhead.
Yes.
And ends up, Angel tells her there's no mirrors, which you would think she'd already know. But
yeah.
She comments that the place is not girl-friendly, no mirrors and no light. Which kind of leads into her talking about spending the night some once she's in college. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they just did, though, if that's not spending the night already.
Well, at this point, they don't realize it's morning yet. They think they just took a little nap in the middle of the night, which
that's
is different.
That's
different than spending the night.
Yeah. Yeah. If she starts talking about getting some mirrors and maybe a drawer for her stuff, and Angel's kind of not, he just... doesn't really commit to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she mentions something about spending the night after the prom. And then she has to explain what the prom is.
Like, how out of touch with reality is Angel if she has to explain what the prom is?
Well, like, I mean, he's been hanging around with her and her high school friends for, like, what, 2 years?
Yeah, like.
On and off, but 2 years. Well, let's say, counting the time he was evil or gone, he's probably equaled up about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never mentioned the prom.
They've never.
Where he would have an idea. Does he not watch TV ever? but she says, imagine a cotillion with spiked punch and the electric slide.
Yep.
But he continues to look uneasy. And she mentions that it's okay because lots of girls have older boyfriends.
He has no questions about what the electric slide is, though. He understands that reference.
Oh, yeah. He knows what that is. And then Angel decides, he's like, you know, maybe you should go home. And she's like, no, it can't be morning yet, which to me also means that she was spending the night because she says there's got to be a few hours before sunrise. That's her exact
You don't have to go home until you just have to go home for a few minutes.
It's dawn.
Yeah.
But she opens a curtain and then sunshine hits Angel and he takes off to the shadows and Buffy closes them real quick and is like, sorry.
Oopsie.
And Buffy says, I guess it's later than we thought. Angel's like just over in the corner looking sad.
Yeah.
Which in the script it says, she says, I guess it's later than we thought. And it says Angel feels that more than she knows.
Oh.
So then we're at school and Xander is walking toward class and Anya approaches Xander. And this is a hilarious conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love Anya so much in this episode.
Yeah.
But Xander basically asks her if she's got her powers back. And then it's like, you haven't, right? And she says, no, I will, though. It's just a matter of time. And they talk about what she did with the power of the wish and everything. And Xander's like, good luck with that. And then she says, I have witnessed a millennium of treachery and oppression from the males of this species. And I have nothing but contempt for the whole libidinous lot of them. I actually don't know what libidinousness means. And I meant to look it up, but I didn't.
Oh, Google break.
Do you know?
Google break. I have no idea.
Google break.
Showing excessive sexual drive.
Okay.
It's like off of libido.
Yeah, I guess it's from libido. Yeah. And then Xander's like, okay, why are you talking to me? And she says, I don't have a date for the prom. and Xander's like, yeah, that can't have anything to do with your sales pitch. And she goes, men are evil. Will you go with me?
Yep.
Which I love. I'm not going to read the whole
thing. That's a great sales pitch. Yeah.
The whole conversation is just amazing.
And I will make it known right now that I am not a huge fan of the Xander-Anya relationship, but there are times where I really just enjoy the way they play off of each other. And this is one of those moments, like, I enjoy this back and forth a lot.
Yeah. And Xander, I've mentioned before, he definitely has a type. He likes his women very blunt.
Yes.
That they are not afraid to speak the truth.
Yep.
Okay, so Anya has kind of a long thing she says here about trying to explain why she thinks that her needing a date is Xander's fault, but they only put like a little bit of the show. So I'm going to read the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And Anya's like, you were unfaithful to Cordelia. So I took on the guise of a 12th grader to tempt her with the wish. And when I lost my powers, I got stuck in this persona and now I have all these feelings. She says, I don't understand it. I don't like it. I just know I really want to be at this dance and I want someone to go with me. And then she says, I think it's a social hierarchy thing. Fear of exclusion from the norm. I mean, it's not a date, which is new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not in the episode.
It's almost like she's like rationalizing it. And that's interesting. Like, I thought the bits that made it into the show were interesting. I wish that there was a little bit more. The canon that's introduced at the beginning for Vengeance Demons kind of warps over time. But like this idea of her literally becoming a 12th grader at Sunnydale High in order to offer Cordelia the chance at a wish. And then when she lost her powers, that became her reality, I think is an interesting one. But it doesn't match exactly
They changed that in season 6.
Yeah, it doesn't match exactly how it works later.
Yeah, because later a Vengeance Demon ends a wish and just leaves like nothing happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because she lost her necklace.
Yeah, not losing the necklace.
She ended the wish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Xander's like, oh, be still my heart. She also says that, you know, I know you like me. You look at my breasts. And Xander's like, yeah, that just means my eyes are open. And then that scene kind of ends. And we come back with Xander sitting with all the gang. And Oz is saying, Anya, huh? Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy. And Willow is basically like, yeah, if something bad happens, I told you so.
Yeah, she's still very in the anti on, which I didn't realize like how much of that carries over. I feel like that really comes to the head in Triangle in season 5 with that episode between Willow and Anya.
There's a lot of really good episodes in season 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to guess your favorite.
You know how bad season 5 is for me? 3 of my top 5 episodes are in season 5.
I believe that. There's a lot of really good ones there.
Yeah.
Buffy says, well, you know, some of us are going with demons, but that's a valid life choice.
There's also this weird bit. This scene's weird in a number of ways, but like there's this weird bit where Xander has like a hand puppet that he talks yeah. about as his other option for a date, and then he continues to use the puppet to make some jokes.
I love you, Xander. I'll never leave you.
Well, if Anya tries to get you killed, put me down for a big I told you so.
Who's this Anya? Is she prettier than me?
And I don't know if this is just in here as a setup for the fact that Xander wants to be class clown at the end of the episode. Like, he wants to
be a
class clown.
Yeah, because that's never really come up before.
Maybe it's something he's trying. He's experimenting with.
There's actually a little scene there that was cut out. There's a lot of little parts cut out in this episode. But Buffy, you know, says Angel's going to lose it, but not his soul. He's going to lose his it. Mm-hmm. And then that the scene ends. But in the script, Xander is still playing with his puppet hand. And he says, why don't you let your demon make dinner for you? I don't even know you anymore. And then he notices everyone staring at him. So he stops and puts his hand down. So apparently that was still going on in the background, the little conversation.
Yeah.
With Xander and his hand.
His hand. From there, we go back to Angel's mansion, and Angel's kind of just wandering through, and he sees Buffy's notebook, and on it, doodled in just like the most high schooler in love way, is Angel and Buffy forever.
And he gets troubled again.
Yeah.
Because she said forever.
He's having to contemplate things. And then Joyce shows up, which is, I like this scene.
New.
I like this. I like this moment. I wish that there was more here, but I think that this is satisfactory. But this conversation really should have happened a long time ago.
I really like the part where when he invites her in, Joyce kind of sees the shackles on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of eyes them and then just looks away. And, like, I really wish I knew what she was thinking there.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
So, like, here's a question. He says, can I get you something? I don't have coffee. And then there's the whole conversation about whether or not he drinks beverages. And he's just like, it's just the caffeine. It makes me jittery. Does he ever, like, I feel like he drinks coffee sometimes on Angel the series, though, right? Is that something I'm making up in my mind?
In Angel the series, this whole vampires don't really eat or drink goes away. And around the same time, Spike starts eating in Buffy, like eating food in Buffy. So they kind of do away with that.
Yeah.
I don't specifically remembering him drinking coffee. I guess he probably did.
I know coffee's mentioned a lot in that show. Like, coffee comes up a lot in that show.
Yeah.
He may never drink it, but for some reason, I'm just like, huh.
They talk about it a lot.
It is mentioned because they're penny pinching constantly. And so they're reusing coffee and all that. Like, I just remember a bunch of that stuff in season one. No, there's no greater horror than having to, like, reuse coffee grounds in order to, like. That stuck with me. Joyce is here. She mentions that Buffy stayed the night, but she says that that's not really the reason she's here. And then she says that she's worried about the two of them in general, and that they're from different worlds, and that Buffy's been forced to grow up fast, but that she's really just starting out in life. And Angel's just like, yeah, and I'm old enough to be her ancestor. And this is, like,
true.
Yeah. But also, like, Joyce puts it in the perspective of, I remember what it was like to be young and in love and understanding that there was nobody else in my life that I could see. And then, you know, you can kind of see some maybe, like, understanding from Joyce's perspective on the fact that, you know, she had a failed marriage and, like, trying to force something that you know is doomed is a really bad idea. And she's just like, you know, you're going to have to make some decisions. You're going to have to make some choices ahead. And I hope that, you know, you care enough about her to make the right ones, and just laying on that mom guilt real, real heavy.
I like that scene. Joyce doesn't interact with Angel a whole lot, but I like this one where Joyce kind of comes to point out to him, mm-hmm. look, this doesn't work. Let her go on with her life.
Yeah. And she just lays
it out. Angel's already been thinking.
Yeah. It's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back kind of situation. I feel like this is like he was already, like, unsettled by what the mayor said. And then just in general, the domesticated life that Buffy seems to be after with Angel, and Angel's being very aware that these two people can't have that. Like, you know, he can't have that with Buffy. It's impossible. And then you have Joyce come in and just like, you know what? I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I am going to explain to you some stuff that you already know and explain that I hope that you understand what you're doing if you continue down this path. Love her enough to let her go kind of mentality is what she's putting out there for Angel. And I think it's a very effective scene for how short and brief it is to really just say, you know, Joyce is not really trying to control the scenario so much as she's just making sure that he understands that Buffy's just starting out. She's still very much a kid, even though, like, they've saw her grow up so fast, and that starting out life with a doomed relationship, someone that you desperately want to be with but know you can't, is not ideal scenario that she wants for her daughter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and see, the next scene is everyone sitting around the table in the library, and they are discussing prom dresses, and Giles comes out of his office and hears them describing a certain dress, and it's like, what's this, a demon? And Buffy's like, a prom dress, which I thought that one was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Giles is just like, yeah, okay, well, let's talk about the mayor's ascension. They talk about the pages from the mayor's book and how it helped a little, but they still don't know everything. And then Wesley comes in and he's like, you know, the trouble is we have no idea which demon he's going to become on that day, because they know he's going to become the living mm-hmm. embodiment of an immortal demon. And Giles is like, there's thousands of them. And Wesley's like, you know, so we need to not talk about a dance and, you know, concentrate on this. And Cordelia, who is there, says, that's too bad, because you would look way 007 in a tux.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point he's like, yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm going to chaperone.
Yeah. Okay. It's Sunnydale High. And you just got to accept this stuff. But like, Wesley's chaperoning this dance. Is he actually chaperoning? Did that like go through a board of some kind?
No, he's just showing up. I guess he had to buy a ticket.
Probably.
There's a little exchange after this that was cut out, because that's the end of that one on the show mm-hmm. or on the episode. And Giles says, fine, you're all suffering from a touch of spring madness, if you ask me. And Oz says, mine is more space madness, but I'd feel better once I get used to the weightlessness. And then Willow says, promise me you'll never be linear. And Oz says, on my trout. And that's the part that was cut out, which the Willow say, promise me you'll never be linear is cute and sweet.
Yeah.
This Oz stuff doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what all they're referencing there, because it's got to be some references that I'm just not connecting in my brain. But like,
the on my trout month. One might be. That didn't occur to me.
Yeah. So sometimes writers get too clever and then maybe they decide to cut it out because they're just like, no one's going to understand this reference.
Okay. Well, I just Googled on my trout and I got a bunch of fish recipes. So
delicious.
Don't know what that is. Buffy is talking about finding Will a dress now. And she says we should check out April Fool's. And Cordelia says, don't go there. I shop there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Giles kind of gets a little upset and says he's going to be wearing pink taffeta. Can we please talk about the ascension?
Yeah.
And Buffy says, we got it. Miles to go before we sleep. But I mean, if we're going to all vaporize on graduation day, can't we have some prommy fun? One night of glory, too much to ask, which is kind of going to become a thing in this episode where she's like, you know, one dance, one night of glory, mm-hmm. one good time.
Yeah.
A lot. So then we leave the library and we are in an old broken down house, which has a VCR playing a bunch of tapes and a hellhound in a cage, like chained up, where he has to watch it. Now, in the script, it says that the hellhound's eyes are held open with metal clamps.
Mm.
And when I saw that, I went back to the episode and you know, got to that part to see. And I rewound it a couple of times and I could not see them.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe they didn't do that or...
Yeah, they wanted to be more humane to the hellhounds.
Yeah. But it says the hellhound faces the monitor, his eyes held open with metal clamps.
Interesting. My big thing is just like... I get that that's a dumb kid doing this, but how did these hellhounds not break out sooner? These cages are like the flimsiest little excuse to try to hold these creatures.
Yeah. Also, where do you get hellhounds? Like, where did he get them from?
eBay.
No, gotcha. Wait, was eBay a thing then? I don't remember.
I think so. I think eBay was starting out. eBay feels like it's been around forever. I'm going back to Google.
I don't know. This would have been like 1999. I don't know that eBay was a thing then.
It says eBay was established in 1995.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, like, what level.
They needed better advertising execs. So then we are at a church. It's a couple and they're getting married in very traditional puffy white dress and tux type clothes. And almost immediately you can realize that this is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But the priest is marrying Buffy and Angel. And they look deeply into each other's eyes and Angel gives Buffy a ring and they kiss. And then they go to exit from the church. They walk down the aisle of the church to leave and it takes a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the script, it says that when they exit the church that everyone is there. Joyce, Giles, and all the Wesley, Cordelia, Xander, Willow, Oz. I went back to look. They're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't show them. Or they were there and it just cut that part out. It says that they're there cheering for them.
Mm.
And Angel shrinks from the sun, but he's fine. And he, you know, right as he starts to look in wonderment at Buffy, she starts to burn and turn to dust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the way her gown goes up is very, very artistic. And then Angel's, you know, horrified that that happened. And he wakes up in bed.
Yes.
Well, on the couch.
Yeah. Anyway. There's you know, the long walk, which you mentioned, takes a long time. There's some great cutaways of, like, not only showing the door that, you know, is just blindingly bright as they're walking towards it with the sunlight pouring outside, but also, like, cuts to the windows. They're in a church. There's cuts to the windows with all of these stained glass murals of all of these religious figures and just, like, Angel just getting more and more uncomfortable and worried as they walk out. And I love the way that that scene plays out. It takes a while to get there, but I love the way that scene plays out and the tension that's there. And then you actually get outside and then Buffy bursts out into flames. And just like the idea of them spending their lives together is ending Buffy's life is just so, it's beautiful. I love it. He is very quickly realizing that he is effectively ending Buffy's life if they are to stay together. And so then we get a lovely scene in the sewers with the two of them patrolling.
Okay, this is a really long scene. This is the big scene in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Okay. Yeah,
they're after a vampire. It's kind of casual chit chat from Buffy while Angel kind of keeps shutting her down. You know, Buffy's like, we could just let him get away. And he's just like, what can I say? I need closure. This is a moment. I'm not sure if there's another moment before this, but this is a moment where Sarah Michelle Gellar actually says clothes. And I think it's because it's a playoff of closure, but she actually says clothes instead of clothing.
I didn't even notice that. Oh my goodness. And I notice every time she says clothing.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't notice it. She goes clothes.
Yep.
I wonder, oh my goodness. I wonder if they told her she had to say it.
She had to say it because it was playing out of closure. You can't say clothing there. It doesn't work. Yeah. But she's talking about, no, he needs something for the prom. And Angel's like, we have more important things. And the vampire eventually shows up. Buffy's like, not now, stakes him. And then things start to get a little serious.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Like, do you know where to start with this scene? Because I don't.
I mean, so there's the back and forth leading up to the moment where Angel's starting to talk about thinking about their future and that, you know, it's unfair for Buffy for them to be together. And Buffy brings up the mayor and Angel says he was right. And this is where Buffy says, no, he wasn't. He's the bad guy, which I love that they have that in this episode. I love that they have that.
Yeah. The bad guy's not right.
The bad guy's not right. And I love that they, because that's such a common thing. And I'll say it, you know, constantly. I've said it before and I've said it. I'll say it again, is that, you know, when you're listening to your message, think about who's presenting the message, because that can often construe how the message should be received, if it's a good guy saying it versus a bad guy saying it. But this is a show where you can have your bad guys be right and you can have your good guys be wrong. And having Buffy flat out say that he can't be right because he's the bad guy shows her naivete even more like, you know, in this moment, or panic of being
not,
like,
yeah, maybe not necessarily being naive, but more that she doesn't want to accept it.
Yeah.
So well, she's, and that's in her head, she's like, bad guy. Yeah. I can't, he, yeah. That means I don't have to accept this is true. And even though deep down she knows it is.
She knows it. She knows it the entire time. Like, you have this whole buildup, and it kind of plays like she's in denial during this whole conversation. But the fact that she uses those as the excuses shows again that she has some maturing to do. She has some growing up to do still. And I like that they have that moment. And Angel starts talking about all that she deserves, and that she deserves someone who can take her out to the light and someone who can make love to her. And she's like, I don't care about those things. And then he talks about children, and she's just like, I don't, you know, I'm not ready for children. And then he says, it goes so fast though.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
Like, I don't want to be one of those people that's like, you don't know this until you have kids or whatever, because it annoys me when people act like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people can't love someone else until they've loved a child or whatever, or don't know real love or whatever. I hate that.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'm going to say, until I had kids, I had no idea how fast time went.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my oldest is 8, and like, he was a 6-pound baby last week.
Mm-hmm.
It goes, it just disappears. The days don't, the days last forever. but like, when the time, like when you're looking back at a year or so, it just flies.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting coming from a character here that's lived over 200 years, talking about how fast time goes by. And like, the fact is Buffy, even if she has a long life, you know, he's already lived 2 to 3 times her expected lifespan. Just that understanding, that maturity, like, you know, I've always had like some back and forth with the age difference. Some people really, really don't like the age difference with Buffy being a minor and Angel being as old as I am. But, you know, it's a fantasy show. You get what you want. And I've always said, we talk about maturity levels. Buffy's very much designed to be older for her age.
Yeah.
And Angel's very much designed to be very immature in a lot of ways at the beginning of their relationship.
Yeah. The age thing bothers me whenever I think about it. So I just kind of, I love their relationship. So I just don't think about
just
it.
Just like, la, 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 la.
Because when I actually do think about, he's over 200 years old and she's like 15, 16, you know, 18. I'm like, that is just so,
and
no,
somebody said
wrong.
This. I think it was somebody on TikTok. Somebody said this, and they said, this is going to ruin Buffy and Angel for you. But if you think about Angel in like season 4 of Angel or season 3 of Angel, so anytime in Angel the show, and think about that version of Angel trying to start a relationship with a 15-year-old girl, it's sickening to think about that. But there's not a lot of age difference between when Angel and Buffy got together and when Angel is there in his own show for Angel himself. There's not a lot of difference between a 240-year-old and a 247-year-old.
Yeah. Why would he even want to, the different in interest and maturity and what's going on in your life and stuff, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
And so I just try not to think about it.
Don't think about it. Just don't think about it.
Like, I don't like being reminded how old Angel is.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of ignore it. You cannot ignore it in this episode, though.
Yeah.
Because he uses that for a lot of the reasons.
He does.
Why they should.
And it's very valid. But, you know, he talks about that she deserves a chance at a normal life. And she's just like, I'll never have a normal life. And then I really feel like I'm just going to play a good chunk of this next section here as a sound clip. Yeah. But
I'm sorry, Buffy. You know how much I love you. It kills me to say this.
Then don't. Who are you to tell me what's right for me? You think I haven't thought about this?
Have you? Rationally?
No. No, of course not. I'm just some swoony little schoolgirl, right?
I'm trying to do what's right here, okay? I'm trying to think with my head instead of my heart.
Heart? You have a heart? It isn't even beating.
Don't.
Don't what? Don't love you? I'm sorry, you know what? I didn't know that I got a choice in that. I'm never gonna change. I can't change. I want my life to be with you.
I don't.
That's just wrong.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I love that delivery.
Give her the reason.
I love it.
No, but
it's so perfect in how pained he is in saying that. Because like me as an audience member reading this from outside, I can see that it's not that he doesn't want to be with her, which is what Buffy follows up with. You don't want to be with me. It's that he doesn't want her to be with him.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, it's harsh, but it has to be. Like, I mean, it's a breakup. It's going to be harsh.
It's a breakup. and then she's just like, how am I supposed to stay away from you? And he says he's leaving.
Yeah, because that's literally the only way it would work.
Yeah, well, because they're so drawn to each other.
Yeah, they could not be in the same town and continue to not be a couple. It's impossible.
Yeah, but he says, if we survive, I'll go. And she's like, where? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? You don't know?
Somewhere. He doesn't even go that far. He doesn't even go that far, which is the craziest thing to me. Yeah. Like, he goes some distance away, but he's still relatively close. And I think that's part of it, too. Like, he can't be so far away from her that he can't get to her quickly if he knows that there's a time that she'll need him.
Which, you know, happens pretty quick in the next season. But she's kind of like, is this really happening? And they stand there looking at each other, and both of them are, you know, just devastated, as is all of the audience watching.
Yeah. I will say this suffers from we've had like 8 breakups this season, but this one we know is the real breakup just because of the tone of how it's filmed.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, but like it always cracks me up, and like I think that there's something interesting about the fact that it is Angel initiating the breakup here that really makes Buffy realize, oh, this is actually happening this time. Because I think pretty much all of the breakups that have happened this season, all of the we need to take time apart moments, have been more Buffy driven, right? She's been the one to make that call. So like there's been a couple of times where Buffy's been like, okay, we need some time apart. We need to not be a couple right now. But when Angel's the one who's just like, okay, so I've been thinking about our future and I think maybe we need some time apart. Buffy's like, no.
But he's not asking for time apart. He's leaving town.
He doesn't get to that part until the very end of that conversation. Like, he's just talking, like, at first it's just framed as if, like, this whole conversation starts with him saying, I've been thinking about our future, and that us being together is unfair to you. And then Buffy's like in immediate denial because Angel's now talking about the stuff that Buffy's known all this time. Mm-hmm. But Angel's always been like a little bit like, I can't accept this, you know, tell me there's a way we can still see each other kind of stuff. And so she's always kind of felt like maybe there's something that she's missing because Angel keeps acting like there's something that maybe could make it work out between us. But when Angel's finally come into his reality of like, no, this isn't going to happen. We can't continue to do this. And I don't want to continue to do this to you. Buffy gets real like aggressive really fast and trying to come up with excuse after excuse after excuse. And for some people, I think that's a tonal shift. And I've even had that. But it's the fact that Buffy knows that this is true. And like she admits it in the next scene with Willow. But she knows that this is true. She knows that Angel's right here. But the fact that Angel's finally admitting it makes it real.
Yeah, it's kind of something that they've ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And once they face it, it's over. So
yeah.
She gets terrified that he's about to make her face it.
Yep.
So when this scene ends, there's in the script, and I'm pretty sure this is not in the episode, there's kind of a montage of Angel like outside Buffy's house and staring at it.
Oh, God.
And then her patrolling in the graveyard and walking by the mansion, staring at it. And then Angel wandering through the park at night and Buffy sitting on her rooftop at night. Just kind of a montage of them being sad.
There's 2 quick cuts. It's not a montage at all. It's just Buffy on her roof and then Angel like staring into the fireplace or something. It's like, okay.
So I knew it wasn't all of it. And I couldn't remember exactly what it was when I was reading the script because I knew it was.
There was something.
I knew all of that was not in there.
Yeah. I kind of wish they had either cut it out entirely or gone for a longer montage if they were going to do that. But it's just kind of awkward of them just like a couple of quick cuts of like, look, they're sad. I was like, I could have figured that out.
Yeah. Well, that scene, it's really emotional. I usually cry during it. Mm-hmm. So I have since the first time I saw it. And I think that when I first saw this episode air, I'm sure they had announced that Angel was going to get his own show by then, but I didn't know it at the time when I watched this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was common knowledge and that the, you know, TV studio or whatever had announced it, but I just thought he was leaving the show and I was so upset.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I remember reading something years ago. I know it hasn't been any time recently. I vaguely remember reading something that they had a lot of trouble shooting this scene. And that Sarah Michelle Gellar was actually in tears during it.
Oh, yeah. I've read lots of things about like them having to stop filming for a moment because Sarah Michelle Gellar got way too real. Yeah. But yeah, it works. They go to those places and you're just like, oof. And then the next scene also really works. It's Willow and Buffy. Being Willow and Buffy, Willow's really trying to just put all the blame on Angel, calling him a big, dumb, jerk person and all of this stuff.
Well, in the script before that scene, there is a little scene that is the hellhound escaping, breaking out of the cage and then like breaking out of the door and running off.
Well, it's
but they cut that out.
They have it, but they have it. They changed the order of it, right?
Okay, so is that later?
After, it plays right after this scene. Which I think is a better editing choice to like linger on this Buffy Angel stuff and then do the Hellhound breakout.
I think so too.
Let's not.
For some reason, I thought that they cut it out and that you don't see the Hellhound breaking out of the house.
It happens.
It is in there.
It happens after this scene.
So, okay. Willow and Buffy.
This
scene is also very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffy does a lot of taking up for Angel in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she hasn't got to anger yet. She's still at grief. You know, she claims it's not his fault because he doesn't get the prom and all that. And then she kind of says that he's right in the long run. I think maybe he's right. It's just heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the part where Buffy lays her head in Willow's lap and says that I'm just trying to keep from dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, I can't breathe. I feel like I can't breathe. And I cry in this part too.
Yeah.
this episode makes me cry a lot.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's a lovely moment between Buffy and Willow. Willow is absolutely the person that would be there for Buffy in this moment. She's trying to offer so many things. She's trying to offer, you know, I'm going to bad talk Angel. I'm going to be there to support you. I'm going to be understanding that this is a decision that really had to be made and kind of, you know, say that I'm sorry that, you know, I was really hoping that maybe it could work out, but, you know, I think he's right, too. Like, she kind of offers all of these different layers of support, trying to find what Buffy needs. And really, Buffy just needs Willow to hold her while she breaks down. And you're just like, oof. Oh, boy. And then we get a quick cut of the Hellhound breaking out of its cage. And then we get a Xander and Cordelia moment. Yeah, so Xander sees Cordelia at April Fool's again, comes in to talk about how long it's taken her to buy a dress, and she's just like, I'm considering things more carefully nowadays. I don't want to get stuck with another dud. And
she like, comes out swinging. She comes up with that. Yeah, she comes up with that quickly.
But you can tell, like, she plays it well. She's, like, nervous at first, and then it doesn't take long before
Cordelia.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It doesn't take long, though, before another sales girl there mentions that she needs to get back to work and that the boss is, you know, watching. And this is.
And then, like, you see the boss, like, giving her a dirty look, and it's like, what? She's talked to him for like 30 seconds. Go do some paperwork or something. I can't stand micromanaging bosses. Go do something. I do not like that woman. And she actually has a name in the script. She's Mrs. Finkel.
Mrs. Finkel.
Oh, well, I think they say
that's
that.
Such a like middle school teacher name, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then Xander's like, you work here? And like that happened. But then the sales girl wanders off and we don't see Miss Finkel again. And Cordelia and Xander finish talking.
Yeah.
It's like they don't care now.
Yeah. It was just there to uncover Cordelia's secret she's been keeping.
Yeah. And I love this part because Xander wants to know why she's working there. And she's like, to buy a dress. And he goes, don't you already have all the dresses?
And yeah.
And then she basically does this kind of rant thing about I have nothing, and explains that her dad cheated on his taxes and she has nothing. She can't go to college that accepted her, and she can't stay home because she no longer has one. So, like, it makes you wonder where they're living now.
Yeah. He got real quick. He got real quick.
Yeah. And then my question is, though, when they had the episode with the SAT scores, Cordelia did really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she had a very high score. And I'm trying to figure out why she can't go to college. Like, did she not get any scholarships or anything?
Yeah.
Like, with her score and the grade she gets and everything that they always talk about, she should be getting a full scholarship somewhere.
Yeah.
But so she could go to college.
It's very possible that she could.
I got a couple of scholarships to state school, and I did not have like a 4.0 or anything. Mine were just barely, my grades and scores and stuff were just barely over average, and I got things.
Yeah.
So she would have had help
mm-hmm.
to go to college, but especially how they always play like she is so intelligent and everything.
It could have been very much that she just has already missed the deadlines for that kind of stuff because she just assumed.
She assumed dad was going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then she has Xander's just like, wow. And she's like, you can run along now and tell all your friends how I got mine and how I have a name tag. I'm a name tag person,
mm-hmm.
which she's kind of looking pretty bad, treating name tag people pretty bad there.
Yeah.
But also
she's still Cordelia.
I don't really. Yeah. Like, Xander's not one of my favorites. I don't think he's any. Most people don't have Xander as one of their favorites. But I think she's doing him a disservice in this scene because that doesn't seem like something Xander would do.
Mm-hmm.
Run back and be like, oh, Cordy has to work now.
But it
doesn't have anything, you know, and take pleasure in that. That's not Xander. He's goofy and creepy, but he's not like cruel or anything.
But it's certainly something that
Cordelia
or Harmony or any of the people that like her natural circles tend to fall into would do.
And
I think she's having a lot of knee jerk reactions because she's very embarrassed by her circumstances and just unloading. And like, it seems very genuine in the moment. I like that she has those moments of panic later on and Xander covers for her. And I like that there's some genuine, like, nice closure between Xander and Cordelia in this episode. And God, was it needed.
Very much needed. But then her little rant is cut short because the hellhound flies through the front window.
Mm-hmm.
And Xander, he does what he always does, and he shoves Cordelia to safety and goes after the monster.
Yep.
At which point he gets knocked on his ass, which is pretty much what always happens to Xander when he gets after the monster. It's about to, like, I guess, eat Xander. Do hellhounds eat people?
They eat brains. We get that established.
Okay, so he's about to eat Xander's brains, and then he sees a man in a tux and goes after him.
He looks much tastier.
It says that it shows Cordelia cringing as the screaming young man in the tux is torn limb from limb, but in an off-camera fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That part. I like that direction. And then he looks up and starts going for a girl in a prom dress, and then all of a sudden stops. And outside the dress shop, we see a teenage boy, and it says he's supposed to be dressed nerdy.
Mm.
And he's got a camera. And it also
says... Does it say a camera in the script? Because it's like this weird, like, remote control thing. I have no idea what this device is that he's using. I think it's supposed to be, like, emitting a high-pitched sound because they're hellhounds.
Oh my gosh. I always just assumed it was a camera, and I've never looked closer at it.
It's weird. Like, but I think it's supposed to emit, like, a high-pitched sound that gives them a command.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
I think, like, the very first time I saw the episode, I assumed camera because he was, like, watching what the hellhound did or something. Mm-hmm. And then I never thought more about it because you're always paying attention to other stuff in this scene. Oh, my gosh. That makes so much sense. Okay.
It's a dog whistle. He's got a big old dog whistle.
He's got a very complicated dog whistle.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Well, then we are at the library and everyone's there. Whole gang. We are watching the security tape, which it I don't know how they got it, but police and stuff would be there because, you know, a guy got killed, but somehow they have the
Cordelia just ran and grabbed it real quick and they ran out.
I guess so. Yeah. And they're watching the attack and kind of discussing it and trying to figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Cordelia makes a comment that the Hellhound has good taste.
Yes. I love this. I love this little like seed and payoff just a few lines later.
Yeah,
it's
real
great.
Quick.
It's
yeah.
So great though.
Buffy's kind of sitting over at the steps.
Mm-hmm.
Says she doesn't want to see it again. And Giles is like, no, you need to study it. And she's like, I got it. And I don't want to see it again. I got it. And then Willow kind of helps out. And she's like, you know what? She's right. She's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wesley is like, if I'm not mistaken, this is a hellhound. And he's really tense when he says it.
Yeah. A hellhound.
Yeah. And then they explain that they were demon foot soldiers in the Mankish Wars. And they feed on brains.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cordelia interrupts and is like, zoom in. Xander's like, yeah, it's a VCR. I don't do that. Anyway, they kind of have a little back and forth about that.
Mm-hmm.
At which point Wesley, very smoothly, I might add, asks what she was doing with Xander.
Yes, it's so great. He's just
yeah,
like,
it's very smooth.
He goes from perhaps we could stay on topic for once and then immediately goes into, what were you doing with Xander?
And Xander immediately covers for and says, burning a hole in daddy's wallet as usual.
True hero.
Yeah. Then Oz wants to see something on there and asks him to pause it. Which Sandra's like, it's a normal VCR. It doesn't do that. And he's like, oh, yeah, it can pause. And they see the Hellhound Razor. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, it's a good episode when we just spend most of the episode just reciting line after line after line. Like, the dialogue,
oh,
the
doing
exchange
that too
is so
Sorry.
Good.
It's just
no,
so good.
It's so good. Like, I'm right there with you. Like, I mean, it is. Like, there's lots of times you can summarize a scene real quickly and just put out a few lines. You're like, ah, this is my favorite line, or I love this moment. But I'm just like, ah,
it's so good.
It's just like a lot of just really fun back and forths and little subtle things. It's the little subtle things that I really...
I feel like we didn't do that in the Buffy Angel breakup scene, though. We did a lot of summarizing in
that.
That one was hard.
Yeah. We didn't want to recite that word for word. But like this has some really cool subtle things. Like I like that Willow's coming to Buffy's defense. I like that you still have that moment of tension where Wesley's just like, oh, she's back with Xander.
Yeah. Does he know that she was ever with Xander though?
Oh, surely he does. Surely he does. I don't know.
I mean, I don't, maybe because it's just general
stuff
knowledge.
Happens,
I don't know that.
Stuff happens off camera, Kim. Surely he does.
Nothing happens off camera.
These characters freeze in place.
What are you talking about?
These characters freeze in place. They don't do anything.
Especially because they're actors.
Yeah.
They freeze. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Okay. The next scene, they have a yearbook and they're looking at Tucker Wells, who is the Hellhound Razor. I'm trying not to quote everything again, but
it's so good.
Wesley's like, let me guess, he was quiet and kept to himself. And Oz is like, well, he didn't seem like the murderous type, which is fun. Then they start talking to Buffy because she's still sitting over by the stairs.
She's being a good inanimate object, and it's great. Yeah.
Then Willow is hacking into Tucker's email account, at which point they see that he has threatened the prom.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get them on their big night.
And this is that so quick payoff, but God, I love it, where Giles is just like...
So, we have a threat against the students on their big night. A hellhound trained to attack people in formal wear.
Oh, are we all catching up now?
And then they all start talking about taking their clothes back and getting refunds on their tickets. And I'm like, don't y'all usually go to these things to prevent it? Like, why are you?
Yeah, what did they still? I don't understand.
You still need to go.
I don't understand. Well, it's also funny because like there's been so many times where this stuff has happened and they've just been like, oh, well, we'll just take care of this real quick, you know, like, if it was a bigger threat, if it was a threat that really Buffy couldn't have handled single-handedly, and Buffy was so adamant that, no, I'm going to do this, and you guys are going to have a nice night, and I'm not going to, like, hear anything of it. But, like, they kind of make a comment, it was just like, oh, these things are vicious, and they eat brain, but it's just, you know that they're not a big threat.
Yeah.
You just have this feeling. They're not a big enough threat to, like, justify... like the weirdness of everybody being like, well, we got to focus on this. We can't go to prom. And Buffy being like, no, you're going to have a prom and I'm not going to have anybody tell me otherwise. Because you know, Buffy can handle this. So
yeah,
you're not really worried. And then Buffy gives her rah-rah speech about how she's going to kill everybody on the face of the earth just to make sure that they have a good prom.
They kind of split up and stuff, and Buffy tells Wesley to go to the house. He wants strength in numbers, so she tells him he can take Cordy.
I'll shout out. I may praise Wesley too much, but like we've had this back and forth where Wesley feels like he's part of the Scoobies, and he feels like he's working against the Scoobies, and he feels like he's part of the Scoobies again. This is another episode where he feels like he's part of the Scoobies. The fact that he's so willingly just takes instruction from Buffy here. Mm-hmm. Buffy's in command. Buffy is giving out orders, and Wesley accepts that immediately. She's like, all right, well, can I also get a buddy? Can we do a buddy system? And she immediately knows what he's asking for, and it's great.
And she tells Oz and Willow to go find the person that Tucker was emailing, and Xander volunteers to go to the magic shop so they don't have to go past where Cordy is working. He's supposed to be asking if anyone's been in buying supplies to raise a hellhound. And then she goes to the butcher.
Yes.
Looking for brains.
The, like, shadiest meatpacking plant that ever did exist.
Right?
Like,
why is it at a dock?
What?
Like, dock type area.
It's just, it's wide. Like, so not only is this meat just like hanging from hooks in a place that clearly isn't refrigerated in any way.
Like open air.
Open air. But then they let Buffy just walk through it with them and then give her an address to one of their other customers. They're selling blood to some random guy out the back door. Like, what is happening here?
It's a Sunnydale butcher shop. Yeah.
It truly is.
And not only do they give Buffy the address, they say weird kid.
Yeah.
And now Angel and Buffy run into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Angel, like, how are you? And she says, good. And he kind of looks at her and she's like, I can lie to you now.
I'm like, allowed.
I'm allowed to lie to you now. And Angel tries to kind of tell her he misses her. And she's like, no, not now. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. They talk about the prom and Angel's like, you're still planning to go. And I'm like, Angel, come on. It's the prom.
He just doesn't get the prom, Kim.
Yeah. And then she kind of says, you know, I'm over the whole Buffy gets a perfect high school moment thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh,
sweet baby.
Angel offers to help and she's like, no. And then he offers to help again. And she's like, I'm okay. And then kind of softens up a little bit and tells him thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, so I guess at some point Cordelia returned to actually finish out her shift.
Yeah.
So she's there and is about to leave. And the other sales girl is just like, aren't you going to take your dress? And she's just like, well, I haven't finished paying for it. And she's like, well, somebody did. And you're like, ooh. Okay.
Yeah. But like before that happens in the script, Mrs. Finkel is in there with them.
We got Mrs. Finkel back. Let's go.
Yeah. So she comes in through the office. And it's Cordelia and the other sales girl are cleaning and sweeping and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, get as much done as you can tonight, girls. I'll see you tomorrow. And she leaves. And after she leaves, Cordelia and the other girl stare at each other for a moment. And then they immediately drop their brooms and brushes and grab their coats. So it's kind of funny. They're like, nope,
we're done.
Yeah. So then the sales girl stops her and they have the dress thing.
So Buffy returns to the library. Everybody's come back from their missions and say that basically they all struck out. But Buffy got the address, so we're all good. And she instructs them to go ahead and go on to the prom. And they start to say no. And then she gets more and more aggressively like, you're going to the prom. And ends with, have a nice time. And they all very quickly leave at that moment. And then we get a nice Buffy Giles scene.
Yeah, she tells Giles to go to the gym and keep an eye on everybody until she gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of says a bunch of stuff about them getting their moment. And Giles is just like, Angel's not taking you, is he? And she said, he's leaving town. Yeah. And then Giles is really sympathetic. He's upset for her. And he goes, I understand that this sort of thing requires ice cream of some kind.
It's so precious. Like, it's just so wholesome.
Yeah. And yeah. Buffy's like, ice cream will come. You know, it's like, I'm not at the ice cream part yet.
Yeah.
Then she explains that as a slayer, you know, kicking ass is comfort food. So she's going to go do that.
Yep. Works out.
Yeah. And then we are at the prom.
Which is actually in the gym.
The gym.
Crazy, I know. It's like the most mind-blowing moment when I watch this episode. And I'm just like, oh my God, they're having a dance at the gym?
Okay. Are you being sarcastic?
Like, or? I literally remember this dance being at the Bronze because everything else is at the Bronze.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm like, that happens. My high school prom was at the gym.
Yeah.
That's
but like everything else is always at the Bronze. Like all That's of true. Their school activities is at the Bronze. And then they have this moment and I'm literally like, oh, this is actually at the gym.
Yeah. Why are you not at the Bronze?
That's where you have your school dances.
Yeah. So we see Xander and Anya walk by, and Anya is telling all about some wishes in the past that she's granted, and Xander is noticeably uncomfortable.
It's just a long string. There's so much great Anya throughout all of this prom stuff of her just going over all of this. Yeah. Quick shout out. We've had a drought. We've had 3 whole episodes in a row that didn't have any songs in them. But then we're at the prom. Mm-hmm. So just going to throw out, because there's all of a sudden, like, I think they just saved up their music budget because they knew the prom was coming. And they're like, crap, we're going to have music on that episode. So we got Crazy by Fatboy Slim playing now. And then later we have Celebration by Kool & the Gang, which has a great moment tied to it. And then Good Life by Cracker. So like that's 3 songs in a row that play in the background during these prom scenes. And I'm just like, ah, there's where all the music budget went.
We have a little conversation with Wesley and Giles about how they went to all boys schools. And Wesley makes a comment about making the freshmen get up as girls. Mm-hmm. And realize Giles is like, what? And so he starts talking about the dip.
It's tasty.
And then Cordelia walks in. She walks into this prom and she owns this room.
Oh, man.
The way she walks in. She's gorgeous, gorgeous dress. And like she walks in with no date and she does not care.
Yeah.
She is not worried about it. I mean, yeah, it's an amazing entrance.
Yeah, she's.
Yes. At which point Wesley starts choking.
Yes.
And Giles rolls his eyes.
Appropriate response.
Yeah. Then we see Willow and Oz, and they're talking about how they got a prom picture. We should dance before something horrible happens. And Oz is, no, that's not going to happen. And Willow asks him if he's nervous, and he says, you think Buffy's going to let us down?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Wholesome Oz. Yeah. Wholesome.
Yeah. Willow's like, oh, let's enjoy the punch then. So they go to do that. And then Wesley goes up to Cordelia, or Cordelia goes up to Wesley. I'm not sure which one. But he says she looks smashing, and she takes his arm, and they move off.
Mm-hmm.
And run into Xander and Anya, Xander is very excited to see them and is like, hey, please talk about something. Say something.
Yeah, anything. Like the greatest bit is like the bit of dialogue right before that is Anya talking about a girl who wished her ex would cannibalize himself. So like Xander's been like just absorbing all of these. And then another quick little payoff, very sweet, where Xander.
This is their closure. The closure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cordelia says thank you, emphasizing
the thank you.
The thank you to Xander. And he says that it looks good on her. And she's like, well, duh.
And that's when we realize that Xander paid for her dress.
Oh, God.
So apparently he snuck back in between hellhound hunting.
Yeah.
Probably when he went to the magic shop to check and see absolutely. If there were any.
Well, and I love that this is a continuing supplies. Like thread, like because we've talked about like Cordelia's love language to others is acts of service, but like the love language that she responds most to is gift giving, and so like this, like it's just all of a sudden, we're good. We're like, I mean, like after this, they're not nearly as toxic to each other, not nearly as mean. And like, it just always like I see this and then I cut to that moment when her and Angel have a fallout in Angel the series and he buys her a bunch of clothes to make it up.
Because he gave away her clothes.
But he buys her a bunch of clothes and it's all good. And she's like, yay, I got new Exactly. Yeah. So that's very consistently Cordelia. The way to her heart is to buy her clothes.
So we see a lot of other couples come in, including Jonathan, mm-hmm. who has a date. We don't know who this person is. Yeah. She's a lot taller than him, though.
Yes. Good for
which
him.
Which I mentioned because that's been a thing throughout the...
Yeah.
And then Buffy is at Tucker's house, or this... I'm sure it's not his house.
Yeah.
This abandoned house he's squatting in. She kicks open the door and goes in, and she sees him. He's about to let the hellhound out, and she's like, nope, new plan. And then we see... They start kind of fighting and they knock over some stuff. And then Buffy notices all the video tapes mm-hmm. and it's Carrie and Pretty Pink and Pumping with the Volume and a whole bunch of ones about school dances,
mm-hmm.
all of which seem to be from the 80s.
Well, those were the ones that were cheap and easy to get.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, that's how you taught them to, mm-hmm. you know, go after people in formal wear. And then this scene, I absolutely love this, but I love this whole episode.
Yeah.
The next thing is she's like, why would you want to ruin the prom? And he's like, I have my reasons. And we get a little flashback and literally all it is him saying to a girl, you want to go to the prom with me? And she says, no. And then we go back to the abandoned house and that's like all it was.
It's the best.
Just like one little rejection has made this guy go insane, which, I mean, happens. But this is kind of funny.
It's the best villain origin story.
Oh, yeah.
It's perfect.
It's going to be a whole two-hour movie.
That's great. Like, it's just, what's your villain origin story? I got rejected asking one girl to the prom. That's all it took. Yeah. It's great.
Well, like when the very first time I watched it, when I remember specifically when that part started and he asked her and she says no, I'm like, oh, it's going to show him asking a whole bunch of girls. And then it just stops. And I'm like, what? That's it?
That's it.
That's it.
Just one.
And Buffy's like, whatever. You're just incompetent. And then she says, I'm going to lock you in here and I'm going to go to the party. Or no, she says, and then I'm going to party like it's. And I just know she's going to say 1999. I just know.
I feel like maybe I'm filling in the blank, but I think she actually says that in the episode, but I may just have filled in the blank there.
I think you filled in the blank because I remember it getting cut off.
Oh, man. That's so funny. Because like every time I'm just like, she says it there, right? I was like, apparently not. Maybe not. Oh,
maybe
man.
She does.
That's so funny.
I don't know.
But yeah, she does definitely stop short because there are three empty cages in that room. And that's when Tucker's like, you got to have a redundancy system. Which I'm just like, you know, he may be a dumb kid that's trying to murder all of his classmates because he got rejected once, but he's got a point.
Yeah. And then we never see Tucker again.
We never see Tucker again.
Then we are back at the prom and Buffy gets there and she sees all the hellhounds and they're running toward the door. She, you know, shoots them with the crossbow and it hits one of them. It's dead. And the other two take off toward Buffy and Buffy's, you know, got to run. And she's like, oh, yeah, follow me. We're going away from the prom. And then a dance song starts playing.
It's Celebration.
Yeah. I was fixing to say, it's Celebration, right?
Yes.
But, yeah. Celebration starts playing and they stop dead and take off back toward the prom. As Buffy says, oh, come on. That song sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, they get into the building and Buffy follows them.
And like, this is when you know just how little consequence this monster of the week has because she dispatches of these two very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Almost immediately. And like one guy in a tux.
Gets kind of close enough to where he might get scratched by one. That's as close to getting to the student body as they got.
And then he asks where the bathroom is. And so obviously from another school and she's like, yep, there you go. And then we see Buffy dragging all the dead hellhounds into some bushes,
mm-hmm.
which we don't know if she ever goes back for those or not, or if the like groundskeeper finds them the next day or what.
My canon is like several people find them and just ignore them. And then they eventually go up with the school when it blows up.
Yeah, no, could be. Then Buffy grabs her weapon bag, and she's got a dress in it.
Mm-hmm.
She walks off, and she leaves her weapon bag there on the sidewalk. She doesn't even hide it.
You leave Hellhound bodies. You leave your weapons bag. You leave Tucker back locked up somewhere. None of that's important.
The next scene is Buffy entering the prom, and she is also looking gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this part. She catches Giles's eye and nods. And then he gives her the most fatherly, proud smile that mm-hmm. has ever existed. He's so proud of her. That's his girl. You know, she did what she was supposed to do. I love that look he gives her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a complete look of approval.
Yeah.
Then Willow sees her and goes over to her, and they talk about how devil dogs are gone and the prom. And then another scene. You can start this one. I feel like I've been talking for a long time.
You're. I can tell you're excited about this episode because you're just like, oh, and then this, and then we have this part.
I like this one.
Oh my. So it cuts to a little later in the prom, and we see that the crowd has gathered to hear them announce the various winners of certain types of crowns. Like, you know, apparently we've already gone past the prom king and queen and all of those big ones, and now we're going down to the bottom of the barrel and we're talking about class clown because that's an elected position.
usually high schools vote for all the, like, most likely to succeed, mm-hmm. class clown, best smile, cutest.
But doesn't it normally just get printed in the, like, yearbook?
It doesn't get announced at the prom. Yeah, it's printed in the yearbook, might announce it during the school day or something.
Yeah. But anyway, so Xander's there, just full of anticipation, waiting to hear the announcement. And apparently the class clown of 1999 is Jack Mayhew, who, like, is loving his life. He's just charging up there, so excited, wearing his balloon hat. Just, I mean, I feel like he's earned it.
Yeah, and Xander, who, not really a class clown at all.
Really? I mean, you have to show up to class to be a class clown. But
yeah, he's very upset about this. He says that none of the people who vote are funny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Ella, we got this bit. So Buffy's at the punch.
The first time I ever watched this, and I remember I was sobbing.
Yes.
And like, I start tearing up at this, like, before it even happened, mm-hmm. like at the very beginning, because I know it's going
to
happen.
It's so no matter what, it's going to get some kind of emotional response to me, but it's a different time every time I watch it. Like, I'm just like, I'm going to be strong this time, and then I'll get to the very end and I'll break down there. Or sometimes it's like right from the beginning. And like, I watched this episode again today, and this was a right from the beginning. Like, as soon as he said, "We're not good friends, most of us never found the time to get to know you," I was just like, oh god.
"We're not good friends, most of us never found the time to get to know you, but that doesn't mean we haven't noticed you. We don't talk about it much, but it's no secret that Sunnydale High isn't really like other high schools. A lot of weird stuff happens here.
Zombies,
hyena people,
Snyder."
"But whenever there was a problem or something creepy happened, you seemed to show up and stop it. Most of the people here have been saved by you, or helped by you at one time or another. We're proud to say that the class of 99 has the lowest mortality rate of any graduating class in Sunnydale history." "And we know at least part of that is because of you. So the senior class offers its thanks and gives you, this. It's from all of us. And it has written here, 'Buffy Summers, Class Protector.'"
The look on her face when she walks up to get it. And like, all of her friends just grinning for her.
It's so good.
They knew.
It's so good.
They voted for it.
It's so good.
And I wish we knew like who did it, because like everyone didn't think of it on their own independently.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody started this and was like, write in Buffy for Class Protector.
Yeah.
And I want to know who.
I would like to think it was Jonathan, because Jonathan is the one.
Jonathan would be the best. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's my headcanon, at least, that Jonathan was the one who's just like, hey, I kind of want to do this thing, but it's not actually something that somebody can win because it's not a category, but like, let's get enough write-ins for it.
Yeah.
And I can see that for sure.
And the award is an umbrella.
Yes.
Which is wonderful all on its own.
And I have seen so many people like DIY their own ones, and they're all just so adorable. Like, I just love it.
Yeah, I would like to have one of those. That would be a fun thing to have.
Yeah.
Like for my Buffy collection.
Yeah. But it's such a sweet little, it looks like something some high schoolers put together trying to figure out how to, because it's got like these, like, it's got like tinsel and stuff just like glued to it. Like, it just looks like made from the heart, but very genuine. Yeah. Like, whoever designed that prop did a perfect job.
Yeah. Well, like, in the script, like the scene where she turns around with her umbrella, it's got like everyone reacting with joy and clapping and whistling and stuff. And then it says Anya is supposed to be rolling her eyes disgusted. I'm glad that she didn't do that.
Yeah. This definitely goes down, I think, for a lot of people as like one of the like most iconic scenes of the show. Like one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely wonderful. One of the, like, I don't know if there's many more feel good moments in Buffy, because Buffy tends to like rip your heart out and stomp on it and leave it there to lie in the dirt. Like, you don't get a huge amount of feel good moments from this show. And this is one of the really genuine feel good moments of the show.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my goodness.
This one and the one in Family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think
they have to be my two favorite feel good moments.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's not a whole lot of them.
There's not a lot. And they make us fall apart emotionally, too. It's just, the show's the worst. The show makes me have so many emotions. I have so many feelings.
Yeah, we keep watching it over
we keep
and over
watching
and
it.
Over again.
And we know this stuff's coming, and we still have these feelings. I don't understand how this worked.
Well, like, I recently had surgery on my shoulder, and afterwards, I was kind of like where I couldn't really do anything for a couple weeks, and I rewatched Buffy from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're doing this and I'm watching each episode to like remember it as we go, I just watched it from beginning to end again.
Yep. We love it.
Okay, and so the next scene is Wesley coming up to Giles to ask his opinion, and he says he doesn't want to model bad behavior. But what does Giles think about asking Miss Chase for a dance? Giles cuts him off and is like, just have at it.
She's 18. Just go.
Yeah.
Oh, which I don't think we never really understand like how old Wesley is. He's obviously older. He's probably, I'd say, at least mid-20s. But like, yeah, like Giles is just like, you have so little maturity. She can run circles around you.
Yeah, he's like, right then. And so he goes to do it. And then we see all the couples dancing and Anya just getting up to do a slow dance with Xander. And like, they kind of are holding each other. And she's like, this isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, something's happening there.
And then another conversation with Giles and Buffy, which again, the feels.
Uh-huh.
He tells her she did good work, and she's like, and I got a toy surprise. And she says, people, you know, every now and then people surprise you. And we see Giles notice something behind Buffy, and he smiles, and he takes the umbrella from her and walks away, and she turns around and sees Angel, who has shown up last minute at the prom.
In a tux, in fact.
In a tux. And this scene is amazing and wonderful, and it's so sweet, the song they slow dance to and everything, but it's still not a perfect high school moment. Because they're not together.
For me,
it's still painful.
For me, the perfect high school moment is much more the Class Protector award moment than this moment. But it is like, it is kind of playing off of that, I think, is the idea of like, they get to pretend for just a little bit longer. And that conversation I had before about when Angel admitted it, then Buffy could no longer pretend like they could maybe, you know, continue on the way they've been going. Once Angel actually accepts it, then it's really... it's really over. But then they have this one little moment of, let's pretend for just a little bit longer. It doesn't change what comes next, but, you know,
yeah,
we can dance here. And they do, and they dance to Wild Horses. It's the Sunday's rendition of Wild Horses, and it's really a solid, like, I just love this playing in the background of this moment with all of these couples dancing behind as it circles around Buffy and Angel, just kind of having this last little moment of of intimacy, understanding that that's on a ticking clock for them. So, yeah.
It's so sweet. Yeah. And I've read a lot of things about this episode where a lot of people feel this episode is Buffy growing up and like kind of moving from childhood to young adulthood. I love this episode. I think it's amazing. It's one of my favorites. I don't really get it here. I think it's more in the next episode.
So like for me, that's the show. That's what the show is Buffy growing up. And so like to pinpoint an episode like this is when she became an adult. No, the entire show is about growing up. You get that at the very end when she's just like, I'm not done baking. Like that's the whole statement of the entire show is that you're never done growing up. You're never done maturing.
While I agree with you, I think between the end of season four and the beginning of season five, there is a huge jump in maturity. It's noticeably different.
Yeah. And it's often like it's been described as you have the high school years and you have the adult years. And then you have season four kind of being the transition between the two. So for a lot of people, season four is the transition into adulthood. And then season five, six, and seven really is really focused on that.
Is a transition episode. I know a lot of people see it that way, though. I love it. Her finally getting some recognition for everything she does.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And you notice that Snyder is just absent, and it's so good.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad he's not there.
Yeah, this is a good, like, it's a feel-good episode. Like, it's one of those, like, you are emotional throughout this entire episode, and then you end with such, like, hope and good feelings. And it's kind of the reverse of what happens a lot of time in Buffy. Like, a lot of times, like, things are going good, and then you're like, oh, no, what's coming? Who's going to die? And so it's like the reverse of that. Like, once things start to look up, then you know, okay, something bad's going to happen at the end of this episode. But this episode is just harsh. Like, throughout the entire episode, it's just harsh. It's tragic. It rips your heart out. And then you have this really sweet ending. I think it stands out so much because while still being very much the Buffy formula, it kind of flips the Buffy formula on its head. And I like it. I like it a lot. And you apparently like it a lot. Yeah. All right. And we only have two episodes left this season.
Oh, well, yeah, that's
kinda
true.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, and then we'll start Buffy and Angel.
Yes. Oh, man. Graduation Day, part one. We are going to do part one and then part two in a separate because, you know, we talk a lot.
It would be too long.
It would be too long to try to do them both in a single podcast. But that's the plan moving forward. And we thank you all so much for listening. And this is where we say bye.
Bye.
Somebody pointed out that this episode's also weird because it's the celebration episode, but it comes before the final battle. So you don't get the celebration after the battle. You get the celebration before the battle. And I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting because you really don't get the celebration. It kind of ends in the parking lot with Fire Bad, Tree Pretty.